If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Sound Effect on 88.5 KNKX, and I'm Jennifer Wing. Our theme today is underwater, and I am here at this lovely little pocket beach near Seattle's Sculpture Garden. I brought with me a coffee mug, and I just filled it with some water from Elliott Bay. And the water inside the mug is clear with a few bits of sand in it. It doesn't look like much. But the reality is, inside this mug, scientists can extract hundreds, if not thousands, of DNA strands that can paint an incredibly detailed picture of all of the life that's alive right now in this ginormous body of water before me. And one of the people pushing the possibilities of this new technology is Professor Ryan Kelly. He's a biologist and an attorney at the University of Washington.
I think when we think about science, we think that scientists sort of have some magical way of doing whatever they're trying to do in the world. And it's not at all true. Scientists are just like everybody else. And if you wanted to know how many frogs were in a pond, scientists to know how many frogs are in a pond are going to do exactly what you would do to find out how many frogs are in the pond or how many fish are in the sea. They're going to go out and try and catch frogs and try and count them. It's not sexy, and it's not magic. It's we go count frogs. So what we've been working on is a way of trying to make that easier. Instead of counting one species at a time by hand, we are using the traces of DNA that those animals leave behind, where we could take a glass of water, sequence the DNA out of it, and tell you what's living nearby.
Have you done a control where, say, you have a pond with 15 frogs, and then you scoop up the water, and you sequence the DNA, and you come up with the same number?
We have done that. We did it at the Monterey Bay Aquarium in California. We went and asked, what's the biggest tank you have? And the biggest tank they have was 4 million liters.
The one with all the sardines?
Yeah. The one with the sardines is called the open sea tank. We took a liter of water out of a 4 million liter tank. We didn't ask what fish were in the tank just yet, and we looked at the DNA that we got out of the water. And so it turned out that we had a pretty good, not a precise estimate of how many of the different fish, but we were able to see most of the fish that were in that tank using just the DNA. And so that gave us some confidence that what we were doing wasn't crazy, that we could work backwards from the DNA to sort of have some idea of what was there. And then what we did next was go out into the ocean right next to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, actually, at Hopkins Marine Station, which is Stanford's marine lab. We said, okay, well, this works in a more or less controlled environment in the aquarium. Can we make it work out in the field? So we drove a little boat and had divers in the water. The divers were counting the fish as they swam from habitat to habitat, from a seagrass bed through a sandy bottom, through a kelp forest and rock reef. And then they were counting fish along the way, and we were grabbing bottles of water. And we sequenced the DNA, and we compared it to their answers of how many fish they saw. And what was remarkable about that was that we saw the same fish that they did, by and large.
From the glass of water.
From the DNA. DNA, we saw the same fish that they saw, and we saw a lot more. Right? This is always true. The DNA is going to pick up hundreds or even thousands of species, and when you're counting, you're counting a handful of species at most. And so that's one thing that's really exciting here, is not just that it works, but it works and shows us hundreds or thousands of species all at once. But what was more remarkable was we saw them in the same places. What we're sampling is what we're sampling here and now in the environment. So the question I get a lot is, how do you know you're not seeing dinosaur DNA? Right. And what people mean when they say that is, well, I know that DNA can last for a long time, and we have a mammoth sequence that we pulled out of out of Russia in the permafrost. How do you know you're not seeing
plesiosaurs?
Right. Yeah. You could see plesiosaur DNA in Puget Sound. The reason we know that is that we've done the experiments. And if you're in Puget Sound or anywhere else in today's ocean, that DNA degrades pretty fast. And so that's useful for us because it means what we're seeing is here and now.
This is so exciting because you can create a baseline of what exists in the ocean without actually having to physically eyeball every living thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for things like Deepwater Horizon or Exxon Valdez, when we have these big disasters, the first question everybody wants to know is, well, what's the effect of that? And the answer is, well, we didn't have a lot of baseline information. It wasn't like we were just out there counting things every day until Deepwater Horizon happens, like waiting for a disaster so that we could measure the effect of that disaster, right? So things like this that make it easier and cheaper and more effective to do that sort of baseline monitoring of the marine environment, we could do in a routine way for not much money. And then when something bad happens, or when something great happens, you know, then you could ask, well, what is the effect of that?
Right. If we cordon off a section and make it a marine sanctuary, go back and test it after it's been that way for 10 years and say, oh, there's actually an uptick in the biodiversity here, or
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What are some of the strange things, the surprising things you found?
my favorite surprising story is when we did the aquarium study in Monterey Bay, and we looked at our DNA results, and we're getting all these fish, like Atlantic menhaden. This is a fish from the Atlantic that's like a food fish that has no business being in an aquarium of the Pacific Ocean in Monterey Bay, right? And they were sort of worried. Actually, the Monterey Bay Aquarium staff were like, well, what is an Atlantic species doing? And how do you get that DNA? It must be a mistake. And then we said, well, can you give us a sample of the food that you feed those fish? And sure enough, the food that they use a couple of different types of food in that particular exhibit, and we were able to sequence the DNA from the food, and that accounted for all the species that that we couldn't figure out where they were coming from. So the real surprise there is that we're sampling DNA from a 4 million liter tank, and we're getting a few mysterious species, and it's coming from the feed that they're feeding the fish. So the technique is so sensitive that not only are we seeing the fish in the tank, we're seeing the food that those fish ate.
How is this being applied right now out in the world?
Well, our most recent study was looking at the effect of upland urbanization on Puget Sound. We were interested in how the whole watershed might affect eelgrass habitats in Puget Sound, and in particular the animals that live on that eelgrass. And much to our surprise, when we looked at the DNA, it actually showed us that the more urban areas had more different kinds of species living there, which was a real surprise to us. And when we dug into the data a little bit, it turned out that almost all of that increase is clams. So different kinds of clams living in sort of muddy, sandy habitats in the eelgrass beds seem to do better near more urban environment. Is it that the clams are coming to the humans or the humans are coming to the clams? And we can't answer that question yet.
To be continued.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Ryan Kelly, thank you so much for joining us here on Sound Effect.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.